Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to Lore Watch, a roundtable freeform discussion about lore and our favorite things of media. I'm your host, Joe Perez, one of several lore-focused folks from Blizzard Watch, and I've got my stupendous co-host with me today, Matt Rossi. How are you doing today, Matt?
I'm getting yet more emails for people who are not me, but have the same name as me.
It is a weird problem to have because I get the same thing. Mine's a little more like out of like, I guess, understandable since my name is essentially the John Smith of the Hispanic world. But yeah, it's always weird when you get email for
there
somebody else.
There are a surprising amount of Matthew Rossi's.
Yeah.
You don't think of Matthew Rossi as being a particularly generic name, and yet there's a lot of them. Yeah, this one is, it's like this huge family potluck, I guess, is happening. And I don't know a single person in it, but the Rossi family that these people belong to is having a potluck. And they keep inviting me. And I'm like, I don't know you. I don't live anywhere near you. I don't. What am I supposed to do here? How many different ways do I tell people I don't know who you are? So, yeah.
Well,
that has nothing to do with anything, but he asked.
I was going to say, and that's not what we're here for. We're here to answer your questions. So if you have questions for this or any of our podcasts, we do have a lot of them now. Be sure to send them into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. You can go ahead and just specify what show it's for and ask our questions. Or if you have a suggestion for a theme, just go ahead and let us know. If you don't want to do the email, you can also send them into our various podcast channels on Discord. We have a patron Q and podcast questions channel, and we'll always look in that patrons channel first, just as a way of saying thank you for those of you that are able to support us and continue to make sure shows like this and our other shows are able to work. If you can't support us, we understand. You don't want to do the email, we also understand. Just go ahead and throw those into our Q and podcast questions channel. Again, just specify what show they are for, or if you want us to have an adventure in which one of us gets to use it, make a game. Decide how me and Matt have to fight for it instead of mud wrestling or thumb wrestling. Either one is, acceptable, but I'm sure you guys can get creative. But without further ado, we're going to get started with the very first question here. And this one is from Zek, a longtime fan of the game and the podcast. I think I figured something out about the Eternals. I believe they are world souls that have died before waking up. The Winter Queen woke up without knowing how she got there. If a world soul dies, does the world not die with it? Question mark. So does the world that died become their realm in the Shadowlands? Because we know Titan souls can't really die, their energy just moves because they are conscious. But what happens to one that dies before waking up? Is Zoval the world Sargeras destroyed that was infested, or maybe is that the Maw? Their only memory of life starts in the Shadowlands, leading me to believe they are Titans that died before the world soul awakened. Also, I think Alun is a sleeping world soul that can never wake. Her realm is the Emerald Dream. Your dream when you sleep, I think she is a special world soul or one that chose not to wake up. I believe her to be a Luna of the dream, so why would she ever wake? She does a lot of Titan things that gets called Mother Moon. I don't think she's a Moon at all. I think she sticks around Azeroth to protect it as much as possible with her somewhat passive abilities. Titans empower things. Illuna empowers people constantly. Azeroth has two moons. I think Illuna chose to be by Azeroth and is, in fact, Sleeping World Soul watching over Azeroth. Azeroth is the final Titan. They didn't say the only Titan in a world. What if Azeroth never wakes up and does like Illuna and would passively, through the people who inhabit her, because she not only is Azeroth special, but all races made up of it defy all odds constantly. There's a lot here to unpack. So I guess we'll start with the first ones first. We don't have any indication on what the Eternal Ones really are. A world soul that never woke up is as good of a prospect as any of the others. And we do know that there is some sort of tie between them, or at least an equal of power level. But we do know that the power that a world soul generates is immense, right? So Argus, I don't think technically ever really woke up. It was actually shackled before it ever sort of was born, and was used as the fuel for the engine that was being used to resurrect and sort of force demons back into the plane ahead of time. In the books, or in the short stories, we actually get the whole glimpses of it being a terrified world soul, or one that is being tortured. And when we face it, we're not really sure that it's kind of woken up, or if it's just a manifestation of that particular energy that's been twisted. But when we kill Argus or defeat Argus and send that soul to the Maw, or in this case, just the Shadowlands in general, it overloads the Arbiter. It's too much for the Arbiter to handle. So I don't know necessarily that world souls that maybe never woke up became Eternal Ones, but there's nothing that says that it couldn't happen either.
One thing to point out, we don't know that Titans can't die. That is not something we know. We know that the Pantheon didn't die, but that was because Norganon took action at the moment before their bodies were destroyed. He cast a spell that spirited their world souls away before they were destroyed. That doesn't mean that Titans can't die. It doesn't mean world souls can't die. So we don't know that Titan souls can't really die. That is not something we know. It doesn't mean that it is the case, but we haven't been given that information one way or the other. So that needs to be pointed out. And that also means that, for instance, the world soul that Sargeras killed when he destroyed that planet that was infested, we don't know if it died or not, because we don't know if they can or not. If they can't, then where did it go? Did it go to the Shadowlands? I couldn't tell you. Since we don't know what made the Eternal Ones, we do know that the bodies and the roles of the Eternal Ones seem to have been designed from the start by the first one. We have the prototype Pantheon that we run into when we go into the Sepulchre of the First Ones, which clearly indicates that the first ones have some kind of Eternal One generating device.
And at least a plan for it, too, because the entire quest leading up to the reignition of the Arbiter with Pelagos taking over, which, slight spoilers if you haven't gotten there, but it's been a while. You're essentially trying to find a power source to shackle the mantle to, right? Like, shackle the mantle of Arbiter 2 in order to power it.
Which they didn't do previously. The Arbiter, up until that point that we see in Shadowlands but never interact with, didn't have anything there. There was nothing shackled to it. There was no soul in it. It was just the mantle run like an automaton. And one could argue that was the biggest mistake that the Eternal Ones made, that they didn't give the Arbiter a soul. They didn't give it a they didn't replace Sovaal. They fired him and then got a computer to do his job. And unfortunately, that left the computer utterly vulnerable when Sovaal showed up to take it back, because it didn't have anything there. One could argue that the reason that the Argus's soul damaged it so much was that it couldn't calculate what to do with it.
Yeah, it wasn't programmed for that much input, right?
There's no way that this being that just goes on by rote could possibly figure out the proper placement of an entity like Argus. And, you know, that's quite possible. We are operating here on entirely supposition. But I would point this out to you. A world that's lost its world soul wouldn't have to die or become a Shadowland, because we know one world where the where it seems to have never had a world soul in the first place, and that's Draenor. Draenor had all the components that you would want in a world with a world soul in it. It had all the elements. It had spirit in abundance. It was practically a paradise, at least in terms for life, but also an incredibly savage and untamed place, because all that energy was just there for everything to be fought over.
There was nothing to tame the anima or the, we know it's anima now, but it was referred to as spirit then, right?
Yeah. Anima and spirit are basically the same thing. And as a result of that, it's quite possible that if a world soul were to die inside a world, if anything, that world would seem to get healthier to the beings on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because the world soul that draws that spirit into itself would no longer be doing so. It seems very clear that the anima of life is generated by living things, not by world souls.
Yeah, it's world the souls world souls. The world souls sort of sip from that font that is generated by the living beings.
Yeah, and it seems quite reasonable to indicate that the material world of that Azeroth and other worlds exist in, the, for lack of a better word, we're going to call it the material plane because we play D&D for years and it's just a nice convenient term for it. The material plane that the worlds that, you know, like Azeroth live in generates life by itself, possibly due to the machinations of the first ones. That's what it does. Like, in a real sense, to me at least, after seeing Xerath Mortis, after seeing the Jailer's plan in action, I'm more convinced than ever that the other planes of existence, we're often called higher planes of existence, are conceptual.
Mm-hmm.
In order for things to actually exist, they have to exist in a place where all of these things come together. And that's why you need the mortal material plane to exist in order for these other cosmical planes in the orrery to even be there. So in order for concept planes like that to exist, you have to have a mortal plane for them to draw on, because nothing in the Shadowlands could exist without anima. We've seen that. And where does the anima come from? Living things. They don't generate an erg of energy on their own.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have any. There's no anima in the Shadowlands without living things. It's just not there. Despite the fact that the plane itself, every plane you go to, like Bastion or Revendreth or Maldraxxus, and whenever you go to them, without the continuing flow of anima from the mortal plane, they don't exist. They stop existing. The Shadowlands as a whole would stop if living things stop dying.
I mean, that's sort of the whole point of the initial thing of the expansion, right? Is we see how rapidly in our terms, right? Because it hasn't been that long. It's only been 2 years at this point since the events of Argus dying to us going to the Shadowlands. That's not a whole lot of time in the grand scheme of things. And we're already being, you know, when we get there, the place is already sort of a mess. It's already starting to deteriorate. They're already starting, like when you get to Ardenwell, they're already closing groves up in order to try to protect the heart of the forest, essentially.
Yeah. They're like literally sacrificing wild seeds because they don't have a choice.
Yeah. Because it's that or the realm dies. Right. So like we already start to see that sort of interdependence. And for while time is different in the Shadowlands, 2 years of that being broken down had that much of an effect. Like that's massive. Right.
Yeah. And it is one of those things where as you look at that, as you think about the fact that nothing in the Shadowlands would exist without the mortal realm to power it, what about other realms?
Mm hmm.
Like what, I mean, obviously there's not a life to death flow of anima from the mortal realm to say the Emerald Dream, but obviously when people sleep, their anima goes somewhere. And that could be what the Emerald Dream is. It's literally the place your anima goes when you're unconscious. It is the place, it's like the place of mind outside, absent of body.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you are sleeping, when you are in that rest period, you generate this place, and that's where its power comes from. The plane of life, obviously, it's where life is. Is it where we're getting it from? Is it the place we draw anima from? Or is it the place where us being alive generates more energy, and that energy, while we're alive, goes to the life plane and then comes back from it? Mm-hmm. I don't know. I have no idea. We know that the Fel seems to be all about corrupting it, changing it, twisting it, mutating it, chaotically altering it, burning it, You know, that seems to be the Fel in a nutshell. We've now seen the realm of death. That leaves void. Void seems to be the place that that there is no anima, where it's almost like anti-anima. And what does that mean? How does that work? Is it anti-anima, or is it just everything has an, every reaction has an equal and opposite reaction, if we're using physics as an example here? Is void just the equal and opposite reaction? Is it where the nothing has to be in order for there to be something? Because if you don't have, if you don't have a difference, then you don't have things. If you can't tell the difference between two things, there's no difference between them. And if there's no difference between anything, then everything is nothing. So in order to have everything, you have to have nothing in the first place to know the difference between it. I know we're getting into weird philosophical stuff here, but that's what I think these realms are. I think they're incarnated philosophical ideas.
Yeah,
and literally in a real way, and I'm going to shut up after this so Joe can talk, but in a real way, I think the idea that the void puts forth is that all, you know, there are 1,000 truths, all things are essentially possible, is them talking about creation.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that's true is because in order for all this stuff to exist, it also has to not exist or be possible not to exist. There has to be that place where these things aren't. So, but now I'm going to shut up because Joe was going
to
talk then.
The other thing that I want to sort of put out there as well is, while your theory is not, it's not bad at all, like it's actually, it's a good theory, there is one of the
nothing wrong with it.
Right. There's just something that I think also it doesn't take into account, which is that without, like Matt pointed out, without living, the Shadowlands can't exist, but also vice versa. The Shadowlands are part of a system that was already built and put into place all at once. And to kind of counteract the world soul thing, we know that they wake up and gain sentience at some point. But there's nothing that says that they existed before any of those that are considered the eternal ones. And we don't know how many eternal ones there are either. We don't know how many realms there are, how many cadres of beings like this there are. We've only met 5, technically 6 now, because we made another one. But they all sort of existed in parallel. And that's one of the things that they do push when you're going through Xerath Mordis and you start to look, we actually go through like a bunch of the questings with like Firith and going through and actually unveiling some of the stories, that the Shadowlands are as old as the universe itself, essentially. And I'm paraphrasing a lot because it's a long series of quests and it's a long series of story. But the short version is that essentially all of the realms have always existed essentially at the same time by design of the first ones. Right. Like, this is their universal design. Everything has a purpose. So while it is possible that if a world soul dies, that it, maybe it does go to the Shadowlands and does become something of that, and maybe their world does become the blueprint for what's there, usually I would say that you kind of want to push that aside and understand that when the Winter Queen woke up and just remembers walking through the grove for the first time, and she remembers it being empty, right? There was nothing there waiting for her. It was just the land and just her. And then the first set of anima, the first soul showed up. And then she started creating the fauna and then the folks and creatures that would serve the court, and started making the fairies and transforming the anima that was given to her. You would assume that if a world soul died and transitioned and became a realm, it would sort of maybe take things with it already. It wouldn't be there on its own at first. And they all seem to mimic that. The other thing that I think does lend credence to it is, we talked about this before, is Bastion shows that memories can be manipulated to a very large degree. They can be removed. They can be relived. They can be re-implemented. They can be altered. So it is entirely possible that, you know, maybe you're right. Maybe these are world souls that have been made to not remember the life that they led before, or maybe not remember anything that came beforehand. But I don't think it's likely, just simply because of how everything that Xerath Mordis sets into play is that everything has to sort of coexist at the same time for the machine to work.
Let's actually talk about something, though.
Go for it.
That made me think of. Did Xerath Mordis exist before the rest of the universe?
We have no idea, but presumably
it was built. No, we have no idea, but
presumably not, because presumably it was built by the first ones.
But the did the first ones build literally everything all at once? Like, or did they have a drafting place? How did they draft? Obviously, Xerath Mortis is set up like a drafting place.
Mm-hmm.
It's set up with where first drafts of living entities and living ecosystems could be made. Did they, where were they when they made the cosmos? Did they exist before they made the cosmos? Did time exist? Because we're told repeatedly the Shadowlands time doesn't work the way it does in Azeroth. Did they come from a place where there was literally no time? Are they the founders from Deep Space Nine, kind of, where linear time isn't something they experienced? Were they already dead before they even came up with any of this? Did they exist, create the universe, and die before time? There's a lot to think about when we talk, like, because just talking about how it seems like the Winter Queen literally just appeared and there was no souls there and nobody showed up at the Shadowlands. We don't know when the first world souls actually came into the material universe. Like, we don't know, although we're pretty sure they come from the plane of order where arcane energy comes from.
I'm not so sure about that anymore, but still.
Yeah, but we don't know why they exist, or if they existed in another realm first and then entered Azeroth's reality, or were they created by the process of Azeroth existing as part of that process of Azeroth existing?
Or were they created by the first ones as essentially grove tenders to the universe to ensure that Azeroth existed, or
are they shepherded? Eggs?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the entire purpose of the material universe is the creation of Titans. Maybe that's why corporeal existence exists, because Titans, unlike, say, the Eternal Ones or the demons or what have you from other realms, would be born into full material existence. It's like a god that has gone all the way from the part where everything is nothing and nothing is everything to the part where you create a universe.
Mm-hmm.
And thus the universe has discrete existence and non-existence and is composed of all these parts. And now that godlike force is reborn or born into a world where it can exist and be capable of changing existence by its existence. And that's why the Void Lords want to corrupt them so badly in the first place. Because unlike the Void Lords, who, because everything is possible to them, can do nothing, you know, they have to create things to do it. Think about how debased the Void Lords actually are from the purity of the Void. The second that you make a decision, the second that you choose something, you are less. You are no longer the embodiment of 10,000 truths. You're now, this thing is something I did. Therefore, this thing is what I did.
Yeah, no, that's very true, right? Like, and that's, we see that when we start talking about the old gods, right? Because the old gods are essentially what? Lesser versions of whatever was hurled in here from the void, because they've essentially been given form and been altered by this material plane, by what existed, by what,
In fact, that's where all the servants of the old gods are literally created out of the material of this plane, including the old gods themselves. Their bodies that they grow are made of twisted stuff that was already here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
To the point where, like, the curse of flesh and all that stuff is about them twisting what's already here. And by making them, by throwing them into the material universe, they're essentially copying whatever the Titans are for whoever the hell put them here. And it's just, it's fascinating to think about, is this a case like where the first one's plan for reality actually calls for this?
Now,
did they design the cosmos to do this? Or is it like a corruption error? Like when you get a virus and your RNA is repurposed, is it like that? I don't know. But thinking about it in terms of where the Eternals come from, the Eternals seem very much philosophically like the Titan, but practically very different. And now I'm going to shut up because Joe was trying to talk there.
I was going to say, now, and the other thing that I want to consider here is moving on to some other sections here is talking about Ilune as well. Now, the proposition that Ilune is a sleeping world soul that can never wake, and her realm is the Emerald Dream, I'm I don't dislike that, but I don't think that there's enough evidence to support that. And while a lot of this is speculation, I think we've seen certain things involving world souls that sort of tell us a little bit about what happens when they're in that sort of nascent state.
And also, we have seen enough now about Ilune to know that she transcends even just one world.
Yes, because she can move freely between realms. She can move freely between the barrier of existence, which I don't think is talked about enough. But going back to the world soul portion of it real quick before moving into more about the Ilune, Argus and Azeroth were incredibly powerful world souls. Argus was incredibly powerful as a world soul, which is why Sargeras used it as sort of the fuel for the engine that he did, right? That's why he did that. But Argus couldn't affect things outside of itself, even when it was aware. Going back to the short story, Thousand Years of War, where, you know, they have the vision when they see the soul of Argus calling out in despair, it can't actually affect anything. It doesn't send for help. It doesn't go anywhere. It just knows enough that about its existence to say, I need help. Azeroth is much the same. Think about it.
In fact, I think I'm going along with you here. Go to the Magni comic. Mm-hmm.
Yep. I was just going to say it. Yep. Go ahead.
Oh, just when in the Magni comic where he's talking to his daughter and he's talking about how he became the speaker for Azeroth, he talks about the fact that Azeroth reminds him of her as a baby.
Mm-hmm.
That it doesn't actually say anything to him. It's not speaking to him in words. It's crying. A baby does not tell you, I'm sick and colicky. The baby screams at you. And then you pick the baby up and you try and soothe it. And eventually the baby might get soothed just by your presence, or you might start trying stuff to soothe it. Like, what about if I give you a bottle? Mm-hmm. You don't want a bottle. What if I change your diaper? Oh, you definitely wanted your diaper changed. That's kind of the way. It's not that the world soul isn't a living, powerful being. It's a baby. It is a baby. It has no experience. It has no conception of what it is doing or itself. Or
context, yeah.
Yeah, it has no consciousness yet. Or more accurately, it has no self-consciousness yet. It's not like a baby. Babies aren't stupid. It's not that you have a baby and it doesn't know how to do anything because it's a moron. It's a baby. Everything that ever happens to it is brand effing new. And it's not the baby's fault that it doesn't understand yet.
It's a matter of unbridled potential, right? Like, so it's a world soul and a baby are very similar in that it is has infinite potential to be anything. And that's one thing we've learned. And until it becomes fully formed and chooses a path, like if it's Amonthul or whether it's Sargeras or any of the members of the Pantheon, once they're formed, they sort of have a role that they fill into, and that sort of defines them. But before that, we're seeing with Azeroth is just pure potential. There is the pure possibility to be anything and everything. Now, going back to Ilune being a sleeping world soul, that's why I don't think Ilune is a sleeping world soul. Ilune has a defined role, whether we know completely what that role is or not.
Wait a minute. It's not an infant,
mm-hmm.
but it might be sleeping, not the way that they're sleeping. They're not sleeping. They're in the womb.
Well, I was going to go different. I was going to go a little bit different, but go ahead.
If she woke, and by woke, we mean was born, took herself to that level of conscious being, and then chose to go back into the dream, it makes sense that, you know, she's Ysera. She's like Ysera in that she took upon herself the conscious act of going into a dreaming state. She's a lucid dreamer. And so everything she does is through intermediaries, but it is not because she can't interact with the physical world. It's because she has chosen to interact through dreams and portents for the most part, because that's where she's most effective. That's one possibility. I think we have to be very careful when we use the word woke when we're talking about a Titan or a world soul.
I would agree.
And the other possibility is that she's not even asleep. It's just her style to do this.
I was going to go a different route with a two, right? Because
by
I
all
think,
means, go with that different route. Let's hear it.
So the way that I was thinking about it is just thinking about Ilun in terms of the fact of what we know about the Pantheon of Death. Because the Pantheon of Death and Ilun are very clearly cognizant of each other. We know that Ilun can travel those realms. But why is that? Why is it that the Winter Queen refers to her as my sister? Why does the Winter Queen understand that Ilun exists? And why does Ilun understand the Winter Queen exists? The Winter Queen has a very interesting role among all of the Pantheon of Death. The Pantheon of Death itself is essentially crafted to be self-contained as far as getting the anima, getting the souls in, converting them or extracting what power they need to out of them, and then essentially shaping that anima and those souls into what it needs, whether it's in Maldraxxus and you take on the role of a protector of the realms where you fight for eternity, but then when necessary, go and fight the void or go and fight whatever extra dimensional invasion comes your way, whether it is going to the Kyrians and being molded from an aspirant into a full fledged Kyrian where your job now is to bring souls in and transfer them back to, you know, to the actual realm of death to shepherd into that process. Or if you're in Revendreth, where that soul must be prepared because it has too much baggage, too much weight with it. But Ardenweald is a place of rebirth. It's a place of nurturing. It's a place of healing. It's a place of taking those wounded souls and in many cases, sending them back to the material plane or where they came from, whether it's another realm or if we talked about the last week, we talked about the Wild Gods and them going back to the Emerald Dream. What if Ilun is a mother program? What if Ilun is designed to go everywhere and protect and nurture the souls or spirits that she's in charge of, and not necessarily a Titan or World Soul, but on that same level of footing? She's often associated with the light and healing, sure, but she's also very present with Azeroth. Like you point out, when Azeroth had the first gaping wound that it ever received, the reason the Night Elves started worshiping her, and I believe the trolls before that, the Night Trolls, they saw an entity that they thought was the moon enter the wound and leave the wound. Enter during the day, leave at night. We don't know what Ilun was doing during that time frame, but we can suspect that it might have been healing or stabilizing, because that's one of the aspects of what Ilun does. And I received a message from Matt in the middle of this, and I think we're going in the same direction, so I'm pretty happy about this. But also all the souls that are that got sent into the Shadowlands. What was Ilun trying to do? Ilun was trying to shepherd them, one, out of a horrible situation, but by the same prospect, helping keep the Realm of Rebirth active so that those souls that maybe are in her charge could return back to her someday. They could be reborn after the realm was stabilized. Ilun is also associated with protection, and this is where I'm going to let Matt talk some more, because what does a mother do if not protect their children, at least in the rhetoric of written word? And Ilun's one aspect, the Night Warrior, is there to protect its people or her people, and again, souls in her charge. And I'm going to let Matt go now.
Yeah, there's actually two roles to talk about when we talk about the Night Warrior. I'll talk about the protection one first, but then I'll segue into the other one. The Night Warrior we know of from multiple things. One of them is the planet Faizandi, I believe it is pronounced. Mm-hmm. That was attacked by an old god.
Yep.
So an old god was probably trying to get to the World Soul on that planet. Because why else would he be there? You know, they don't just show up. Like, hey, we're old gods, we're going to do stuff. No, they're thrown into the universe to find and corrupt old Titan souls. So the planet Faizandi probably has a Titan soul sleeping in it. And the old god came to corrupt it. And the people of Faizandi fought to defend their world because they didn't want to get turned into horrible monstrosity. But the war they had had with them became called the Endless War. And Kadaran's mother, Kadaran was the person who basically tried to channel the power of Ilun directly as the Night Warrior and died. But Theranax, Kadaran's lover, and then later husband, did Winterite and actually survived it. He became the Night Warrior, and in so doing, defeated the old god. Like, I'm keeping that in mind. The full power of a Night Warrior is capable of destroying an old god.
Oh yeah.
If you channel the power of Ilun in the Night Warrior, you can take out an old god. That puts you above the Titans.
Yep, because they cannot do that.
They cannot just destroy an old god. Like he didn't destroy the old god
also,
and then have a bunch of parts all over the planet to deal with. He took the old god out.
Also, but then he just died. Also with ANR the Lifebinder, where did we find ANR's soul when we were looking in, like trying to locate the last Titans?
I'm getting there.
Okay.
But that's not all the Night Warrior does. I would argue that it's the Night Warrior aspect of Alun who sent those souls.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Night Warrior has been said multiple times to be a psychopomp. A psychopomp is a being that, when things die, shepherds their souls to the proper destination. It's very similar to the role that the... why can't I think of their name? They're the people from Bastion. Come on, Matt.
You're talking about the Kyrians.
Thank you, the Kyrians. Yep. The Kyrians perform this role in the Shadowlands, but somebody gets them to the Shadowlands in the first place. Ilune is one of those beings. The whole thing where she hung Ysera up in the stars, that's something that Ilune has been known to have done repeatedly throughout the history of the elves. And you'll also notice that even when she's the Night Warrior, she's not cruel. Like, she doesn't want to kill her Night Warriors. It's just that they can't endure it. They can't endure the pain of being the Night Warrior.
It's like jumping a fuse box, right? You can do it for so long, and you can circumvent some of the things, the safeties, but eventually it's going to burn out.
But think about what that states about Ilune herself. Ilune has a way to not die from being the Night Warrior, because she can then be the other aspect. If there's just one, I think there's another one out there somewhere, by the way. I think she's got at least three.
Mm-hmm.
But when the Winter Queen is calling Ilune her sister, it's because they perform equal and opposite functions.
Mm-hmm.
The Winter Queen gathers up the souls in Ardenweald, gets them into Wild Seeds, gets them ready, and sends them back to the Land of the Living. Ilune's Night Warrior aspect gathers up the slain, gets them together, gets them ready, and shepherds them to the Shadowlands, where they will then be placed according to that, the way the Shadowlands work. She was obviously unaware of the problem with the drought, which is not surprising since the entirety of it all happened relatively quickly. And then she literally, as Argus was barely even cold, Ilune saw thousands of her people dying all
mm-hmm.
at once.
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't have been a lot of time to suss out the situation in the Shadowlands. She just knew that many of her people dying was going to cause problems.
And also,
she could hear the Winter Queen crying out to her for help. So she went with the solution that she could come up with in that moment.
Because it would serve both purposes, right? It would mm-hmm. it would save the souls of her people in a way that is conducive to also saving her sister's land and allowing that process of rebirth to continue.
Yeah, it was actually a very good plan. It's just that she didn't know about the Argus problem. She didn't know what the problem was, and that by doing it, it would just ultimately not work. She didn't know that. There was no way she could know it. Because whilst she is a very powerful figure, clearly she's non-omniscient.
Which is, I think, also an important thing to note here in the Warcraft universe is nothing seems omniscient. Nothing at all. Not the light, not the void. None of it is omniscient. And I think that is a very interesting thing, because it's very rare that you hear about godlike beings or beings of that sort of level of power that don't have a level of omniscience.
And it should even be pointed out that the light, at least the Naru, who are like swimming in the light and consider it like this great cosmic force that directs their actions, can't see the future.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It took them a mortal to do that. A mortal can see the future, and they can't. And that's something to think about.
Now, the other thing that I wanted to bring up too, the reason that I wanted to the protection of Ilune, go for it.
Yeah, go for it. We find a Titan on the moon Ilundris, which makes me think that Ilune
in the Ilarian Sanctuary, by the way.
Yeah, in the Ilarian Sanctuary. I think that this is basically a point that Ilune is an omniprotective being, and any place where Ilune's grasp is named in some way to acknowledge her presence. Here's an example of where, as on Azeroth, we see people kind of forsake Ilune.
Mm-hmm.
The city of Zin Ashari is the most famous Night Elf city. It's the one that, if you watched the Warbringer short, you see get destroyed. It's the one Ashara is standing there trying to protect. It's where the primary Temple of Alun was located. The Temple of Alun that we had over in Suramar wasn't the primary one, but it was the oldest one. And in fact, probably built by Titans. You know, it very clearly, when we go in there, that's a Titan facility.
Yeah, 100%.
But the primary Temple of Alun was in Zin Ashari. And at one point, the primary Temple of Alun in Zin Ashari was the capital of Zin Ashari, because Zin Ashari didn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
It was named Elundris.
Mm-hmm.
For Alun, the Eye of Alun. And that, to me, I think that was a deliberate naming, because that was where Alun watched the Eye of Eternity, watched the Well of Eternity from. That's where she watched Azeroth from, not the planet and its mortals, literally the world spirit Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
Much like anyone might watch an injured child that they wanted to help. And I think that that's the motherly night, you know, the mother moon aspect of Tyrande, but it's all, I mean, of Tyrande, sorry. Oops. Of Alun, but it's also the night warrior aspect of Alun.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the idea of when you can't protect with an embrace or soothing words or kindness, you protect with a fist. You do anything to protect those who need you. And that's very much part of Alun's, I want to say worship, but also just basically her being.
Like, yeah.
We still don't know why Alun made Wildkin? Is Wildkin the right word?
Wildkin, yeah.
Yeah. We don't know why she made them, but we know she did make them.
Mm-hmm.
And that they still can hear her. They just don't know how to explain it to us. You know, I'm going to shut up again because I know Joe had something to say, but I really do think it's interesting to consider the fact that Alun is a completely different order of being than anything we've seen before.
Yeah. And that's part of the fascination with Alun too, and why I think calling Alun a sleeping Titan soul doesn't really do it justice, because like Matt's pointed out, Alun sort of has shown us that they transcend that. And the reason that I say that it's some sort of mother program, and I've been saying this for years, I think ever since we started Lore Watch, even before that, I started talking about the Warcraft universe in terms of programming because it seems to fit. And now Shadowlands has done nothing but bolster that on my part, where everything seems like it's programmed or has a specific reason. We don't know what created Alun, right? We know that the first ones created, or at least we believe that they created the Shadowlands, the Pantheon of Death. By extension, we are sort of extrapolating that they had a hand in creating the Titans and possibly whatever set them into motion, but also beings like that potentially in all the other realms of existence that are out there. Titans, like the Pantheon of Death, like other things we've seen, Titan Watchers, et cetera, seem to be programmed for specific purposes. Amonthul woke up and he knew what his purpose kind of was, right? He went searching for others of his ilk and sort of raised them up. Aenar knew what she was supposed to do as soon as she was woken up. Sure, the whole point of it was like whatever mantle she's wearing or whatever essence that makes her up sort of programmed her to cultivate life and sort of make those wild places, right? Like go to Sholazar Base and go to, why can't I think of the other one now? The other
Ungaro
crater. Go to those places and look at they're often referred to as the Titan's Petri dish, but they were Aenar's playground, essentially. They were places of wild, unfettered life, of spirit being drawn back into beings on the planet, anima being infused back into it, versus everywhere else where the anima was being pushed back into the planet in order to heal it or whatever the case was. But they all seem to have a role they fill, whether it was by choice or design. My gut tells me it's by design, that Sargeras always knew that he was going to be the militant wing of the Pantheon, and that his understudy was always going to be his understudy. Like, that was just going to be how it was. It's the same way with the Pantheon of Death, but I think it's also the same way with Alun. Alun is fulfilling a role that is much needed in the universe, much like the Titans seem to be sort of, we say ordering the cosmos, I say cultivating the cosmos. They go to these planets, make sure that they're okay, set up whatever they need to in order to make sure that it continues on whatever trajectory it is, and then move on. Even if there's no world soul, we've seen that they've interjected themselves multiple times to sort of, you know, cultivate what happens there, or
look
to
at what happens on Draenor with Aggramar. Yeah. Aggramar is in the middle of a hunt for Sargeras, who at this point he doesn't know has turned on the Pantheon, but he cannot make himself leave when he finds Draenor and find that it's out of whack.
Yeah.
Even though he knows, I've got a job, I've got to be doing it, I need to go find Sargeras, I can't leave this place like this, or the poor living things on it will never get anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So he acts. He doesn't act with anything like the subtlety or the completeness of the full Pantheon, but he still acts. He's like, okay, I'm just going to grab this great big chunk of rock and I'm going to infuse it with a whole bunch of power. That should take care of it. You know what I want you to do. And the big rock monster is like, okay. And then he's like, okay, I gotta go. If I get a chance, I'll come back later and see how this worked out. And he's out because he has things to do. But he could not make himself leave until he did something. Now, let's think about this in terms of what if Ilune is not a Titan or a world soul or anything like that, and she's not, like, what is she? Is she, they're all out there cultivating, but what is it we were always told the Emerald Dream was?
We were originally told that it was a backup blueprint.
Now think about what a backup is and how you might make use of it. If there is, if the Emerald Dream is a repository for the backup, not just of individual worlds, but of creation, and it's accessible through worlds.
Multiple worlds.
You could theoretically use a world to get access to this thing, which is essentially the source code for creation, and recompile it. You could basically say, let's go back to running off of version 1.0. And then I got some changes I want to make. But first, let's go back to 1.0. And from there, we'll move forward. If you think of it that way, Ilune would be reorigination.
Mm-hmm.
She would be that force. When you turn on the reorigination force and you completely take a world back, that's Ilune. That's the warrior. If you think about it in those terms, in this cosmos, beings seem to embody concepts, and that could mean that a concept could have existence as a being, even if it wasn't necessarily designed to be one. Ilune feels to me like she could actually be. Like, it's possible that a reorigination, we know a reorigination was used on Azeroth exactly once. What if that got Ilune's attention? Because that reorigination was used before the rise of the Night Elves. It was used in what's now, I want to say Uldum. Yes, Uldum. It's why Uldum is a desert today. And it was used way before the Night Elves became the Night Elves. So what if that thing was turned on and Ilune was like, what? And looked over and saw that. And was like, oh, no, 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 no. And that's why she started. First thing she did was find the race that it was used against and found a group of them and made them Night Elves. And that's why it's Night Elves in the Temple of the Tomb of Sargeras, the Temple of Ilune in Suramar has Night Elf symbols there. Think about why that might be. And that's the thing that really gets me about this whole thing is Ilune might be the cosmic force itself that we see in Ardenweald.
Mm-hmm.
It's in Ardenweald, we see that dead things can come back. It's, for lack of a better word, it's what we see every autumn. When you go outside and you see leaves falling out of the trees and you see the, like, things getting withered and skeletal, you know that that's necessary for the world to come into spring. When you go to Ardenweald, the reason that the Winter Queen is there is because she, even though the place still looks pretty lively, she is literally winter in its metaphorical sense. She is that period of rest before renewal.
Mm-hmm.
Ilune is the renewal. That's what she does. And that's why she's a guardian and a warrior, because all those things, they're all aspects of life as it returns. So I don't think it's quite possible that she is a world soul, because even the world souls, when they come into their full power, do seem to take roles like Amenthul's, yep, you know, role and all that. But it's also possible that she is, I don't want to say beyond a Titan, but just something like a cosmic law.
Yeah.
Like a force that exists throughout Azeroth's realm. And the reason she doesn't just show up is because the Titans are too big to interact with Azeroth, she's too big to interact with them.
Which is why she is summoned essentially through worship, would be my guess, right?
And her actions are almost always not her showing up and doing something. Mm-hmm. Like when we see when Alun personally transforms the Satyr back into a night elf, she doesn't come and do it. It's just a flash of light and it's done. She doesn't make her presence known. That's why she has to have a night warrior, because mm-hmm. she's simply too cosmically vast to just show up on your planet.
Now,
you know?
Now to
also, I'm going to say it's kind of hilarious. We thought we'd get to another question.
I know, seriously. Which, you know, thanks, Zach. there's one last part that I do want to touch on before we, you know, as we're coming up on time, is that this all leads us into the final part of it, which is something that I think Matt and I have been thinking about and talking about for years at this point. I think I did the math and it's been well over 1,000 hours of recorded podcasts with just between the two of us. Of what is the
truth? Should I just jump directly into the casket here, or you know, finish the show?
Let's finish the show first. Let's give the people what they want. It's the question of what is the nature of Azeroth, right? Now, we've always thought that it was Azeroth. Oh, clearly, Azeroth is a Titan. It's a world soul. It's that's what we're told it is. But the problem is everything we've been told, for lack of a better terminology, is told to us by an unreliable narrator. It's told to us by somebody who can only contextualize based off of what they know, whether this is a broker, whether this is a Titan forge, whether this is a Titan watch, or whether this is a journal from somebody who, you know, has gone through all of the research, whether it's Bronzebeard going through and digging up all of these old texts and context of what we think might happen. And
yeah, one of the biggest texts we have is literally the ramblings of a lunatic Twilight's Hammer worshiper.
Yep. And we're gonna get more of that too when Dragonflight comes out, because we know we're gonna go for what was essentially the lost discs of Norgana, and we're gonna go find more, because for everything we thought we had with it, there's still more, which means there's still more we don't know. But the problem is everything we've speculated on in game and even out of game is built off of skewed data. It's based off of information that we don't have the full breadth of. But I want to go back to something that I said earlier, and this is something that has been sticking with me for a while now. And it's this concept that Titans have seemingly defined roles. Azeroth seems to be pure potential. Now, the reason I say that is because Azeroth is sort of in a unique position as far as we can tell, versus everything else that has existed in the universe, where it is very likely that Azeroth is the center of the cosmic sort of chart, right? That every realm, every bit of cosmic energy can touch Azeroth. Beings born of Azeroth can wield and interact with all of those forces. We have beings that can manipulate anima, and I'm looking at you, mages. I'm looking at you, shaman. I'm looking at, to a certain extent, even warlocks with the life siphoning. We have beings that can harness void and shadow. Looking at, again, warlocks and shadow priests. We have beings that can transcend and go to the shadow realms of the Shadowlands and actually interact with ancestral beings. We have folks that can interact with the blueprint of all creation. Everything that exists touches Azeroth, and everything that touches Azeroth, we can interact with without being overloaded, like we've seen happen and was talked about on other realms. Look at Locus Walker. When Locus Walker is having a conversation about what it's like to harness the void, we talk about others that came before, other disciples that Locus Walker had. Every single one of them could not handle it. And even Locus Walker struggles with it. Yet, we have void elves now. They seem pretty okay, for the most part. They still have the whispering, but they definitely seem to have it more under control than the ethereals did. We have the mages that do the order. We have death knights that can walk into the Shadowlands, just like the Valkyr can, just like the Kyrian can. We touch everything. Azeroth, for lack of any other definition, represents sort of, in my mind, the ultimate culmination of infinite possibilities. Because unlike the other Titans that seem to be transformed by Fel, we know that when Sargeras unleashed Fel upon them, they didn't have anything that could fight with it. Azeroth, we see areas that were consumed by Fel healing, reforming themselves. they're not permanently scarred or dead like we've seen on other planets. We know that other planets consumed by Fel just are done. They're gone. There's nothing you can do about it, right? Azeroth is unlimited potential. Matt posited this a couple weeks ago, and I think there's something to it. Azeroth isn't necessarily the final Titan. Azeroth might be the final experiment that the first ones were going for. A being that could potentially exist in a nexus of everything. That's been sticking with me. I don't know that Azeroth is a Titan. I think it might be bigger than that. And that also might be why Ilun has taken such personal interest in it for as long as they have.
Let me put it this way. We know that the Xerath Mortis, which is one of the first one's workshops, for lack of a better word, has a direct connection to Azeroth.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the machinery we see on Azeroth was built by the Lich King under the influence of, you know, Zoval, but the channel was there. Xerath Mortis has a path directly to Azeroth.
Yep.
Why would you put that in?
Why is that necessary?
Unless you needed it for something.
The neck that you get off the jailer looks like the heart of Azeroth that we get, and I don't think that's a coincidence. Yep.
And for that matter, I mean, think about this. That's the building you're in when you see this thing being used is the sepulcher of the first ones.
Mm-hmm.
It's where they're quote unquote buried.
The tomb, right? Because that's what it is. A tomb.
Sepulchers are a tomb. Sepulchers, yep, are usually a tomb, but sometimes they're not a tomb, but they're a burial monument. If you were quote unquote burying the first ones, and the place where you're burying them has a direct line to this little planet, did you bury them in there? Is that what's in there? Is that why everything channels there? Is the egg that's going to hatch into this powerful being has to be rebuilt?
Or on that same line of, sorry, that same line, because you made me think about this. I don't mean to interrupt, but like, what if the first ones wanted to become something greater and Azeroth represents the apotheosis of that?
Well, let me put it this way. If they have to rebuild the final Titan, why will it be the final Titan? Is it going to be the final Titan because it is the Omega to the first one's Alpha? Is it the final one? Is this Birth of the Final Day? Deadline, that thing? You know the meme. But seriously, is that what this is? Is this the end of the process? That's just something to think about. But I know we got to get going.
Yeah, that's going to do us for time. So, Zach, I do want to thank you very much for sending that in. I'm very happy that we were able to go through all of it. And hopefully you all enjoyed that journey as well. There will be more discussion about the Ilun and the Titans and Azeroth as we move forward, especially as Dragonflight's release looms ever closer. And we will be digging through all of the little tidbits and lore nuggets that will be available when that releases. But Blizzard Watch is made possible due to the generous contributions at patreon.com/BlizzardWatch. Your continued support means this podcast signing community is able to thrive and grow. Blizzard Watch supporters enjoy exclusive benefits like early access to the podcast, a better chance at having our question answered on our podcast or the queue, and an ad-free site experience. Again, if you have questions for this podcast or any of our podcasts, be sure to send those into podcast@blizzardwatch.com. Specify the show that it is for so that we can go ahead and make sure it gets pulled appropriately. If you don't want to send us an email, you can go ahead and hit us up on our various Discord channels. We have one set aside for Patreon supporters as a way of saying thank you, where we look first for questions and episode suggestions. That's the Patreon Q and Podcast Questions channel. If you can't support us on Patreon, again, we understand money's tight for everybody, but you're listening and sharing our show with others is its own form of support. But you can also send those questions into our Q and Podcast Questions channel, which we have set aside specifically for you as well. But I do want to thank you very much for joining us. We'll see you next week.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hi,
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.